Chapter 8, Worse Before Better. The veteran clinicians I was in private practice with for so many years had a saying, change is bad. Everyone would laugh at that paradox. I slowly began to realize, as I made the transition from the first-year practicum student they'd accepted to the eager, bright-eyed pre-doc intern, to the admiring postdoc, to the reverent licensed staff member, to the driven staff and board member, that they weren't fully joking. As creator of the DBT program, I wasn't a proponent of black and white languaging like good, bad, right, wrong, worthwhile, worthless. But I thought that reductive wording was part of the joke. Nope. I announced, back when I was made staff, that I was going to push for real change. And when it fell on deaf ears long enough for me to take my edict to the board, I realized that this group, whose core members had done things a certain way since before I was born, really did practice a change is bad way of life. So I, in heartbreak, needed to move on into a place I didn't know. Not just private practice, but a way of practicing I now knew was far, far from the norm, even for supposedly one of the most open and progressive towns in the country. And it's one of the most painful and beneficial experiences of my adult life. I will say this, change is hard. Not all the time, but often. The sudden stuff, the events that rock us to our core and require true acts of bravery in order to come through them, is the most transformative. We know we're a better version of ourselves for having had the courage to face it instead of hide. One of my favorite bands, the Trash Can Sinatras, have this one song with the lyrics I often share with my participants. Out of harm's way, where the traps all lay. They're Scottish, so you can easily miss it. And I never could quite get to a confident place with that whole lay lie thing, despite all the Catholic schooling of proper grammar. But I often think of that line in times of strife, and I try to ride that painful wave till calmer and clearer waters arrive. This is what I ask of you now. Your kid is cutting. You're developing a plan. The most efficient plan with the deepest and most long-term benefits deems that things get worse before they get better. I'll tell you what I tell almost every person I've ever worked with. I'm sorry about that. That's the reality of it. If I could have found an easier way through, I would have found it by now. So, strap in. It's going to get bumpy. First, as I said earlier, with cutting, there is inevitably anger work that needs to get done. It's not pretty for anybody. And when your kid is paraphrasing some point I made with them in our work together and using it against you in a heated conflict, you got to hang in there and trust that they will get through it. You will all get through it. In sessions, I liken the anger work to the Shawshank Redemption. Have you seen that movie? Well, basically, Andy Dufresne spends years planning how to escape from prison. He's innocent, by the way. And the actual night comes when he has his chance. He has to open up a pipe of raw human sewage, climb into said sewage pipe, crawl some ungodly distance. I think they measure it in football fields in the movie. Even vomiting as he goes, until he gets to the stream at the end of the pipe. It's raining, and the shot looks down on him as he raises his arms to the thunder and lightning in an epic gesture of freedom. Yeah, you are Andy Dufresne in this scenario. The anger work that your kid has to go through puts your whole family in the shit tunnel. When you keep going, Even if you barf, you will get through it and you will be free. That's insane to put in a book. The conflicts that your kid will instigate with you as they're figuring out how to navigate their anger will not be pretty. If they were a chronic stuffer before, chances are they'll also overshoot the acknowledging their anger part. The pendulum tends to swing wide before balancing out. You know what I'm saying? Just know that I am also in the third ring of Dante's Inferno. Hell, that is. With your kid. I've already built a safe space and connected with them to say whatever's authentically going on with them. And this is the time I'm almost regretting how safe they feel to express themselves. They're being little assholes to me too, you know. And I engage in the horn lock with them. I make sure I win for them. So they can continue to experience the safety of knowing where the lines are and what consequences they will expect if they choose to cross that line. We will go heavily into consequences in chapter 10. You will also need to engage in the horn lock with them. And for their sake, you must win. I'll get into some tips on effective communication, but first, let's get into what not to do during this process, shall we? Your communication with your kid was already probably somewhat limited because of their age and their tendency to hide unhealthy behaviors like cutting. I earnestly ask that you assume a please preceding the following bullet points. First, do not guilt trip. Just don't do it. They already are mired in shame about their self-harm and whatever else they're thinking they're fucking up. Don't bring up how you used to get along so well, or they used to tell you things, or they used to be happy. It doesn't work anyway, and can actually make them feel worse and interact with you less. Second, do not use phrases that refer to their cutting as just to get attention. Because you know what? You're right. Your kid needs some attention paid to the distress they are experiencing because they don't have the tools and emotional intelligence and maturity to deal with it themselves. Don't kick them while they're down, dude. Third, do not tell your kid they are being dramatic. Your kid obviously perceives they are being ignored in some way, so they thought they needed to amp up whatever behaviors would get them the airtime they believe they need. They did that because they think their feelings are not valid. Don't further invalidate their feelings of distress by minimizing their pain. And last, do not refer to your kid as, quote, too sensitive, especially reactively to something you just said to them that they perceived as hurtful. First of all, it is my job to build up their ego strength, resilience, and ability to shake things off. You're too close to them to do that job. Your kid, no matter how old they get, will always desire your approval. Your words are more powerful to them than any other person they will ever meet in their lives. No exaggeration. They supremely care what you think of them. Second, what I'd like to know is when the hell did sensitive get twisted into something negative? Is sensitivity too feminine a trait, and so we need to systematically denigrate that trait to ensure the patriarchy stays intact? Asking for a friend. The one thing I will tell you, if your kid cuts, they feel big. They have a huge heart, and their emotions are an important part of how they live their lives. Lucky, actually. You heard me right. Yes, of course, all that intensity of emotion is hurting them, and they're currently hurting themselves because of it. But once they learn the tools to identify, manage, and direct all those emotions, they are capable of some incredible things. They will be our future's artists, humanitarians, statespeople, leaders, do-gooders, basically. I call it the Bunny and Rainbows team. Those of us who believe we're on the earth to develop our unique talents to later use in service to humanity. That's probably your kid. So let's get them on that track. Get all those strong emotions directed into a positive endeavor. And that requires a special sensitivity. So let's not shame them for their superpower, eh? Now the do's. Please do thank the kid for being your kid. Do validate all of the feelings they are brave and open enough to express to you. Remember, the feelings, the emotions are valid. The thoughts generated from the emotions are not necessarily valid. Fear is a liar. It tricks us into all kinds of nutty thoughts that are not necessarily true. And if we believe those thoughts generated by fear and worry, we may act from that with impulsive behaviors, which we don't validate either. You know, Rick Carson does a great job explaining this in his book, Taming Your Gremlin. When your kid presents a problem they're having, which is rare and brave already, what do? We validate them before problem solving, as discussed in Chapter 4. It might look something like this. The kid expresses a complaint about school, and you might say, "That sounds hard. Can I help, or do you just want to vent?" And if it's the latter, just listen without offering advice. Fourth, do use effective ways of communicating with your kid. They are not a child anymore. Validation. But also try this DBT exercise on my website, drjjkelly.com. It's the Dear Man exercise, and you can walk right through. Write it out, practice it out loud. It works with bosses and spouses too. You're welcome. Next, do go get some parent coaching. Co-parent from a shared model that you learned from an experienced professional. And lastly, do go out for dinner afterward. You deserve a reward for weathering all this hard work. And even more crucial than you finding the right parenting coach is finding just the right professional to help your kid out of the muck. The next chapter deals with that.